From the mountain to the ocean, from the ocean vast and wide, I was searching for many lives. Turn my search inside. Turn my search inside.
Hello everybody, this is Osho Radio. Osho Radio is a live program made every week by Amrita from Holland and Ambika from India.
Whispers hello, always in times when I need nothing more than what I've gotten, what is right now. Love is a breeze, I can't make any vows. Love is a breeze, my friend, whispering without an end. Love is the promised land, deep inside our hearts. Life has so much to give today, we just let it live. Moving out of its way, love is free to come and stay.
Course today is from Yoga, the Alpha and the Omega, Volume 8, Number 9. Osho is talking about prana, life energy, and how to get connected with that. We are as delicate as the life energy inside this vast material existence, and yet we can reach a point that this energy becomes strong and lasting, and actually becomes our way of life.
A 100 years before, One of the greatest thinkers of the world, Friedrich Nietzsche, declared that God is dead. He was declaring something which was becoming clearer to everybody. He simply declared the feeling of all the thinkers of the world, particularly the science-oriented people. Science was winning every day against religion, superstition. And science was conquering so much that it was almost certain that in the future God cannot exist, religion cannot exist. It was felt all over the world that God has become part of history, and God will exist in the museums, in the libraries, in the books, but not in human consciousness. It was felt as if matter has won the last final war with God. When Nietzsche declared God is dead, he said, he meant that now life will not be in any way a destiny. It has become accidental. Because God is nothing but the coordinating principle of life. God is the organic unity of life. God is that energy which has glued everything together. God is that law which has made a cosmos out of a chaos. Once God is not there, the coordinating principle is not there, the world again becomes a chaos, just an accident. With God disappears all order. With God disappears all principle. With God disappears all possibility to understand life. And with God, man also disappears. Nietzsche himself declared that God is dead and man is free now. But in fact, once God is dead, man is not there. Then man is just matter, nothing more. Explainable is no more a mystery. It has no more depth, has no more infinity, and has no more meaning, no more significance. It's just an accident. Has appeared accidentally, will disappear accidentally. But Nietzsche proved wrong. It appears that it was something like the age of scientific youth. The 19th century was the age of science, coming of age. And as every youth is too much full of confidence, too optimistic, in fact, foolishly optimistic, the same was the case with science also. In Tibet, they have a saying that every young man thinks old people to be fools, but every old man knows that all young people are fools. Young people only think, but old people know. Science was the youngest growth in human consciousness, and science was too much confident. It even declared God is dead. and the religion is no more relevant. It is out of context. A religion was part of humanity's childhood, they declare. Freud wrote a book, The Future of an Illusion, about religion. That it is just an illusion and there is no future really. But God survived. And a miracle has happened within these 100 years. If Nietzsche comes back, he will not be able to believe what has happened. The more the scientific mind penetrated into matter, the more it came to know that matter does not exist. God survived, matter died. Matter has almost disappeared from scientific vocabulary. It exists in ordinary language, but it is just because of old habit. Otherwise, there is no matter now. The deeper the scientific penetration became, the deeper they came to understand that it is energy, not matter. Matter was a misunderstanding. Energy is moving so fast, with such tremendous speed, that it gives an illusion of something solid. The solidity is just an illusion. God is not illusory. The solidity of the world is illusory. The solidity of these walls is illusory. They appear solid because the energy particles, electrons, are moving in such a speed that you cannot see the movement. Have you watched sometimes the electric fan going very fast? Then you cannot see the wings, the spades. And if the electric fan is really moving with such a speed as electrons, you can sit upon it and you will not fall down and you will not feel the movement. You can hit it by a bullet and the bullet will not pass between the gaps because the speed of the bullet will not be so much as the speed of the bullets. This is what is happening. Matter has disappeared, has no more validity. But what science has discovered is not really a discovery, it is a rediscovery. Yoga has been talking about it for 5,000 years, at least. Yoga calls that energy prana. This word prana is very significant, very meaningful, pregnant with meaning. It is made out of two Sanskrit roots. One is pra. Pra means the basic unit of energy, the most fundamental unit of energy. And na means energy. Prana means the most fundamental unit is energy. Matter is just the surface. Prana is the real thing there is. And it is not a thing at all. It is more like a nothing. Or you can call it almost nothing. Nothing means nothing. Nothing does not mean nothing. Nothing simply means that it is not a thing. It is not solid. It is not static. It is not visible. It is not tangible. It is there, but you cannot touch it. It is there, but you cannot see it. It is there, beyond and beneath every phenomenon. But it is the most fundamental unit. You cannot go beyond it. Prana is the basic unit of the whole life. Rocks, trees, birds, men, gods, everything is a manifestation of prana on different levels, on different understandings, on different integrations, but the same prana moves and manifests as millions, as many, but one is the basic unit. Unless you come to know prana within yourself, you will not be able to know what God is. And if you cannot know it within yourself, you cannot know it without. Because within you it is so close. If you go within, you have found the shortest route to know what is. Ordinarily you don't know who you are, where you are, what are you doing here. People come to me and they say, what we are doing here? Why we are? For what? I can understand their confusion. But wherever you are and whatsoever you are doing, the problem will remain the same. Unless you understand the source from where you come, unless you understand the basic structure of your being, unless you come to know your prana, your energy. I have heard it happened. Mullah Nasruddin visited a field and filled his bag full of melons. He was about to leave when the owner showed up. I was passing by, Mullah began to explain, when suddenly a strong wind blew me over to the fence and into the field. What about the melons? The owner asked. The wind was so strong, sir, that I clutched at anything I could get my hands on. And that's how the melons came loose. But who put them into your bag? To tell the truth, Mullah replied, I was wondering about that myself. This is the situation. How you are here? Why you are here? Who has put you into the bag? Everybody is wondering. Philosophy, they say, comes out of wonders. But don't go on continuously simply wondering and wondering. Otherwise, wondering becomes a sort of wandering. Then you never reach. Rather than simply wondering, try to do something. You are here, that much is certain. You are alert that you are here, that much is also certain. Now these two ingredients are enough for the yoga experimentation. You are, the being is there. You are aware that you are, the consciousness is there. These two are enough to make a lab out of your being for yoga experimentation. Yoga does not need sophisticated, complicated things for its work. It is the simplest two things, you and your awareness that you are. Enough, these two you have, everybody has them. Nobody is lacking in these two things. You have a certain feel that you are, and of course you are aware of that certain field. These two things are enough. That's why yogis had no laboratories, no sophisticated instrumentation, and they never needed any grant from Rockefeller or Ford. They needed only just few breads, water, and they will come and beg in the town and will disappear for days. After a week or two, they will come again and beg again, and they will disappear again. They did the greatest experiment, the experiment in human reality, and only with two small things. But those small things are not small. Once you know them, they are the biggest phenomenon ever. The discovery of prana became the very foundation of the temple of yoga. You are breathing. Yoga says you are not only breathing air, you are also breathing prana. In fact, air is just a vehicle for prana, just a medium. You are not alive by breath. Breath is just like a horse, and you have not looked at the rider yet. The rider is prana. Now, many psychoanalysts have come across this mysterious thing, the rider who is coming on the breath, going on the breath, continuously moving in and out. But yet, in the West, it is not a recognized scientific fact. It should be, because now science says matter is no more there, and everything is energy. The stone, the rock is energy, you are energy. So there must be happening much energy game within you. Tides and ebbs of energy. Freud stumbled upon this fact. I say stumbled upon it because his eyes were not open. He was very blindfolded. He was not a yogi. He was again caught in the scientific attitude of making everything objective. He called it libido. If you ask the yogis, they will say, libido is prana, ill. When prana is not vital, when somehow the energy of prana has become dammed up, blocked, that's what Freud has come to know. And that's explainable, because he was working only with ill people, neurotics, mad people, mentals. And working on ill, mentally disturbed people, he came upon to know that their bodies are carrying some blocked energy. And unless that energy is released, they will not be. It is just a diseased prana. But still Freud stumbled upon something which can become later on very, very significant. And his one disciple, Wilhelm Reich, went deeper into it. But he was caught by the American government, because he could not prove very scientifically, that is very objectively, what he is saying. He died in jail as a madman, certified as mad. He was one of the greatest men ever born in the West. But again he was working blindfolded. He was not yet working as a yogi has to work. The scientific attitude was his undoing. He tried to make contact with this energy, the yogis call prana, and he called it argon. It is better, argon is better than libido, because libido gives a feeling as if all is sexual energy. Argon is a better word, more inclusive, more comprehensive, bigger than libido, and gives a possibility for the energy to move beyond sex, or to touch higher realms of being, which are not sexual. But he got into trouble, because he almost felt it so much, and he observed it so much, that he started to accumulate the prana energy, the argon, into boxes. He made argon boxes. Nothing is wrong in them. Yogis have been working on that for centuries. That's why yogis try to live in almost box-like caves with only one small door. Now, those caves look very unhygienic. And how they lived there for years, no air goes in, because there is no cross ventilation. So dark, dingy, and yogis have lived so perfectly and so healthily that it is almost a miracle what they were doing there and how they were living there. According to the modern scientific ideology, they should have died. Or at the most they should have lived as very ill people, depressed. But yogis have never been depressed. They are one of the most vital people to come across, very alive. What they were doing, what was happening? They were creating argon. And for argon to stay in a particular place, cross ventilation is not needed. In fact, cross ventilation will not allow the argon to accumulate. Because once the air comes there, the argon energy is a rider. It jumps on the air and moves out. No air passage is needed. Then layers upon layers of argon go on accumulating, and one can thrive on it and live on it. Wilhelm Reich created small argon boxes, and he helped many ill people. He will tell them just to lie down in the argon box, and he will close the box and tell them to rest. And within an hour, the person is out, feeling very, very vital, alive, all over tingling with energy. And many people have reported that their diseases disappeared after a few experimentation with the argon. The argon box was so effective that without knowing the laws of the country and without bothering about them, Wilhelm Reich started to produce them on a mass basis, and he started selling them. Then he was caught by the Food and Health Department. And he was asked to prove. Now it is difficult to prove, because the energy is not tangible. You cannot show it to anybody. It is an experience. and very inner experience. You don't ask Albert Einstein to sow electrons. But you can believe in him, because you can go and see Nagasaki and Hiroshima. You can see the effect. You cannot see the cause. Nobody has yet seen atom. But atom is, because it can produce effects. Buddha has defined truth as that which can produce effects. The very definition of truth of Buddha is very beautiful. Never again and never before there has been such a beautiful definition of truth, that which can produce effects. If it can produce effects, it is true. The whole modern world is more death-oriented than life-oriented. If you kill a person, you will be reported by all the papers, newspapers. You will become a headline. But if you revive a person, nobody will ever come to know about it. If you murder, your name becomes a famous name. But if you give life to people, nobody is going to believe in you. They will say you are a charlatan or a deceiver. That has always been so. Nobody believed Jesus, they killed him. Nobody believed Socrates, they killed him. They have killed even a very innocent man like Aesop, the famous storyteller. He never did anything, he never created a religion or a philosophy, and he was not saying anything against anybody. He was just creating few beautiful parables. But those parables offended people. Because he was saying such great truths in those parables and in such a simple way that he was murdered. You go on killing people who have been affirmative, life-enhancing. Why you are so much against life? And why you are so much in favor of death? Something has not evolved in you. You are so unalive that you cannot believe that life has more and higher possibilities. And if somebody reaches to a higher peak, you cannot believe that that is possible. You have to deny. It becomes almost an offense to you. If I say I am God, it becomes an offense. I am simply saying that you can also become gods. Never be settled for less. But you feel offended. And you are living only 2% of your possibilities. 98% possibilities are being wasted. As if you were given 100 days to live and you lived only 2 days and died. Even your great thinkers, painters, musicians, geniuses, they live only 15% of their potentiality. If you can blaze to your utmost, you become a god. The situation is such that I would like to tell you one anecdote to explain it. Cohen bumped into Levi Isaacs, who was looking terribly dejected. "What is the matter?" he asked. "I am bankrupt," said a quiet Isaacs. "My business failed." "Ah, well," said Cohen, "what about the property in your wife's name?" "There is no property in my wife's name." "Well, then what about the property in your children's names?" "There is no property in my children's names." Cohen put his hand on Levi's shoulder. Levi, you are very mistaken. You are not bankrupt, you are ruined. This is the situation where you are. Not only bankrupt, ruined. If you don't become alive, if you don't revitalize your prana and energy, you are ruined. And you will live with the false idea that you lived. And you are supported by the whole mass of people around you because they are almost as dead as you are. So you think, this is the rule, this is not the rule. The effort towards religion starts only when you catch hold of this. That whatsoever you are doing is almost nothing. You are wasting a great opportunity. Unless you start feeling God within you, never settle for anything. It is okay if you rest for a night's rest, okay. But by the morning, start going. Remember it as a criterion that your fulfillment is your godhood. When your prana flowers, you are God. Right now your prana is just crawling on the earth, not even standing and walking. I have heard about one beggar who knocked at a big house. The lady of the house opened the door. The man immediately did a sastang. He bowed down with his whole body on the earth. He crawled in her feet. A very strong man, healthy, perfectly healthy and young. The lady said, "What are you doing? Why are you wasting your energy in crawling in people's feet? Why don't you work? Why you go on asking, begging, crawling?" The man looked up and said, "Lady, I am a very scientific man. I am moving alphabetically." The lady said, "What do you mean alphabetically?" He said, "Asking A, begging B, crawling C, work is very, very far." Alphabetical. Don't be so alphabetical. If you are using your prana only for sex purposes, you are crawling. Unless the energy moves to the sahasrar, unless the prana comes to your crown of the head, to your very peak, you will not be able to fly in the sky. You will remain imprisoned and you will remain miserable. Happiness is when you are flying. Happiness is when the sky is vast, unlimited. Happiness is when you have learned the pinnacle, the crescendo of your being. Thank you.
The meditation today is called Breathing in Love. Love is always new. It never becomes old because it is non-accumulative, non-hoarding. It knows no past. It is always fresh as the dewdrops. It lives moment to moment. It is atomic. It has no continuity. It knows no tradition. Each moment it dies, and each moment it is born again. It is like breath. You breathe in, you breathe out. Again you breathe in and you breathe out. You don't hoard it inside. If you hoard the breath, you will die because it will become still. It will become dead. It will lose that vitality, the quality of life. So is the case with love. It is breathing. Each moment it renews itself. So whenever one gets stuck in love and stops breathing, life loses all significance. And that's what is happening to people. The mind is so dominant that it even influences the heart and makes even the heart possessive. The heart knows no possessiveness, but the mind contaminates it, poisons it. So remember that. Be in love with existence. And let love be like breathing. Breathe in, breathe out. But let it be love coming in, going out. By and by, with each breath, you have to create that magic of love. Make it a meditation. When you breathe out, just feel that you are pouring your love into existence. When you breathe in, existence is pouring its love into you. And soon you will see that the quality of your breath is changing. Then it starts becoming something totally different to what you have ever known before. That's why in India we call it prana, life, not just breathing. It's not just oxygen. Something else is there, the very life itself. Getting to the end of the program. Today, before the discourse started, you were listening to Miten, The Atmospheres, and Prem Johannes. After the discourse, there was music by Chaitanya Hari, and we're going to finish with a wonderful song by Milarepa called Samasati. Keep going. Goodbye, everybody. Until the next time. Namaste.
Deeper than the oceans, there is only here.